here? What are you laughing
at? I'm laughing because I can tell I'm already going to be very wiggly and futz around a lot.
It's already happening.
It's already
Episode 17 of Underground Espionage. Nothing changes here. Tara, how are you doing?
Appropriate, Mike. Sweet 17. What an appropriate number for this fine film.
It is. It is. School's out. Summer's here. And it's time for the last slumber party. I'm really excited to talk about this movie today. This is one that I saw a long time ago. Long time ago being, well, actually, yeah, probably early 2010s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Blu-ray came out last year, I immediately grabbed it specifically because I was so excited to show you. And as things happen, I think it's been around a year and hadn't gotten around to it.
Yeah, finally
today,
showed me. It was the perfect time for
well,
it.
Well, yeah, this was, we were deciding what to do, and which is why we're recording this the day before it comes out. A lot of times we give people the teaser what we're going to do. We didn't. We just weren't sure.
We didn't.
And when we were going through movies today, Tara said, "This sounds perfect." I said, "Tara, I think you are right." So I'm excited to talk about this. Tara, what do you got over there in the glass? Before we get started, let's get our little preamble going.
Well, I just poured a little Crianza, but prior to that, Mike, I'm really happy to be back on the old green juice wagon, and I really love offering you a drink. You know, great to be here with you wonderful people. If you know me, you know I like gritty and bitter drinks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I've been on the most unhinged. So after you tasted my coconut mango smoothie with the green vibrant spirulina, I was like, maybe this isn't as texturally good as it could be. So then I mixed it with celery, romaine, apple juice, Mike, and then a little collagen, and that was really unhinged. And so I've been really enjoying my disgusting green drinks lately. So because I've been enjoying my disgusting green drinks, I get to have some wine.
Yes.
And tomorrow.
Well, I was gonna say. Well, Tara, see if you.
I was gonna
you could
step
just see
on your segue,
setting it up because
God.
Right now I'm only having a sparkling water. I need to stay away from the alcohol today because tomorrow I will be recording the drunk commentary for Fatal Frames with the Hysteria Continues boys. And because Justin and Eric are over in Europe with all the time differences, I will be recording it at 11 a.m. So
I'm
I will
so
be getting
excited.
Drunk at 11 a.m. and watching Fatal Frame. So I need to keep it cool today. I need to be ready to rock tomorrow early morning drunk session while watching Fatal Frames.
And what a joy it was to watch the Fatal Frames commentary. I mean, we've referenced it many times, but it's like, even though I know that they're all going to have like reverb or like room
on
reverb
the
on the vocals
on
when
their,
they're
on
talking,
their speaking voice,
even though I know there's going to be some like low key dark ambient
amazing,
underneath them
amazing
as an undercurrent the entire time.
Amazing dark ambient track going the entire time.
Even though I know Stefania Stella is reading scripted thoughts.
Sometimes it's mixed in. You can tell when she's reading.
She's ad-libbing a bit, but then otherwise she certainly has like an entire script, like when she's talking about like crystallizing ideas and things of that nature. I'm assuming Al Festa wrote it for her. I know it's going to happen, but then when it actually happens, it's just, it's so wonderful. And it's like, there are certain things that just can't be spoiled by the anticipation, and that commentary is one of them.
Absolutely. And so we've watched it with and without the commentary, with a lot of preparation for this.
Yeah.
And
I will not be on it, but I'm along for the ride just because I love it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and it's going to be a video commentary, so it'll be on video, and it's only available if you're a patron for Hysteria Continues. So look, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and so and again, and like with the commentaries, I don't even think you need to be watching along. I don't know, we're recording it tomorrow. I think it would be just be a fun podcast episode, whether or not you're watching along or not, because it is a hard one to get. I maybe it's on YouTube or something, but I know the disc is.
Is it really?
Well, it's not necessarily hard to get. Well, it's actually not. you can pretty much get one for pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just saying, most people, you can't just get it. It's not on Prime or
you
whatever.
Can't stream
is what I'm
it.
Saying. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like
we're not, it's not a stream.
You have to get
the
physical
disc,
which I encourage everyone to do.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to want to go back to it. I mean, it's one of those things that requires a base coat, and probably the last slumber party should have had a base coat, but we decided so late.
Well,
in the
I've
game
and I've base coated it. And so, like I said, normally...
I'm still reeling. Like, my brain is still processing what I just saw.
We've been big into the watching a movie and then watching it again for the podcast. Just this week, just wasn't able to do it. It's down to the wire. And we were even deciding between a couple movies that we had seen. So we're like, sometimes that works better.
Yeah. But I mean, we live in Los Angeles. Everybody knows it's chaotic and weird. So we're not going to talk about it. I don't know what I'm talking about either. But you know what? The right thing to do
is to go into the world of Last Slumber Party.
Exactly. It's a much better world.
Exactly. And that's something that obviously that we wanted to do is to enter this world for a little bit, and very happy to do so. Trying to think before we get into it, you know, it's like I feel like I'm trying to think if there's anything else we've been checking out.
We've been watching a lot of wrestling.
But yes, Money in the Bank was fantastic. Yeah. Any listeners who also watch wrestling, I mean, our old series Noise Rumble, you know, that one kind of, again, just with life getting in the way, we were unable to keep doing that series.
I wish
but
we had
keep
the time
watching,
to do that.
We keep
watching.
We're
still watching wrestling.
We still watch wrestling. So I would really like eventually to do an interview with like an indie wrestler, especially or like a deathmatch wrestler.
Yes.
And again, I think anybody. One thing I hope.
We did see Scarlett from GCW out in the wild,
GCW,
the ref. I was really
her.
Excited. I'm glad that we said hi. I know, Mike, you were going to leave her alone, but it was Scarlett and I couldn't.
One thing we do hope with this series is that, getting into the rhythm of it, you don't have to have seen this movie to listen to this episode.
Yes.
Or you don't even have to. We have some interview ideas with people that you might not, it might be from a different world that you might not know, but I think the rhythm of the podcast is enough to be like, oh, I'm going to check that out. I might not be a wrestling fan, but I'll listen to them interview a deathmatch wrestler, etc. And actually, I will say, I won't say. We are actually getting some pretty cool interviews set up.
Yes, but even, you know, but that's the thing about, I think, especially deathmatch wrestling, even if somebody's not into wrestling, like, we've taken many people to live matches.
And then they're immediately...
And they're in love and they're enamored because it's, like, what is there not to enjoy?
And a lot of people who we've taken or we know who have gone may not keep up and watch the stuff, but they want to go see it live again because... It's just so electric. And
especially if you like extreme things, like extreme sound, extreme music, extreme visuals, performances. Like
there was
everything.
A friend of ours that didn't go with us and someone who I didn't think would care necessarily for wrestling and was actually dreading it himself going.
Oh, yes, yes,
and
yes.
And then and I was like, yeah, just have fun with it. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Talk to him the next day. That was the most fun I've had all year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh my God, that was so much
live
fun.
Wrestling is just,
and it's not like he's like
fantastic.
Following it or anything, but like, you know, if we get a chance to go again, he would go or you know, anyone we take always ends up having the best.
Yeah, and that was like the high flying, like Dragon Gate, like super quick. But yes, there's something in it for everybody.
So my point is, if you haven't seen The Last Slumber Party, well, if you're the type of person who wants to watch the movie before you listen to the episode, you're probably not listening to this right now. But if you're someone who hasn't
Don't
seen The Last
deterred.
Slumber Party, I think you could just continue listening to us talk about it, any of the movies we talk about, any of the interviews you do. What I'm saying is, just keep listening. We love it.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I feel like we're doing a lot of talkovers. It is weird. Like, when you start talking about something, you need to get, like, warmed up, you know, so you can kind
of
have a back
course,
and forth.
Oh, of course. So I wanted to warm up.
And so, but I think that the theme of talkovers does carry into this film because it's not like they don't talk over each other. They kind of wait for an extended period of time to say something after someone has spoken to them. However, the soundtrack is just kind of one big talkover. It's like we have...
Yeah.
Ambient music, then we have
First Strike,
amazing band, and then just some like incidental hums kind of blending together into one soupy cacophony that is fantastic.
This is truly one of the most I don't know what the word is to put to this movie.
I mean, here, like, this is The Last Slumber Party. It was filmed in the early 80s.
84, according to the main actress.
Released in
1988.
In 1988. The creative brilliance of Steven Tyler actualized this fever dream.
Not the
one you're thinking of. This is Steve Tyler.
Yes.
Steve Tyler, who, you know, borrowed a house from a friend of his dad.
In suburban Louisiana.
And decided to make this film. And, you know, when I hear that it's going to be a slumber party slasher where girls are partying and the boys are going to come over.
What are you thinking,
Tara? And
there's
an escape maniac with a scalpel.
What are you thinking? You're thinking Slumber Party Massacre, Tara?
Well, I'm thinking high energy, sexy.
Gotcha.
Tension.
Playful.
Filth. You know what I mean? And this really doesn't deliver on any of those things. I wouldn't call it playful. It's certainly not fast-paced. It's not really sexy, but it's not sexy. It's just not intentionally. There's no tits. We see one nip and it's some dude who's got his polo shirt.
But Tara, while it doesn't deliver on those things, yeah. Those expected things.
Yeah, not expected.
Would you say that it delivers oh so much more?
Oh, yes. There's an unexpected sort of languid pacing. Like at some point, one of the teens declares that she would like a Valium. And I was like, yes, I feel like the person that edited this was taking Valium. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like this would be nice, like a nice sedate. Like, if you're ill, if you're fevered.
This would be a great movie to watch sick.
This would be perfect on Robitussin, because it's just like the things that you expect to happen don't happen. Like, there's an escape maniac and he's, you know, holding a scalpel up to your throat. You expect a scream or somebody, a dead body drops from the top of a closet, dripping blood. You expect like somebody to be like, and they run away and like call the police. None of that happens. It's just kind of like a long gaze, you know, like it'd be like somebody like longingly looking out of a window, wishing somebody would come over. Like, and truly it is the most, like, the girls complain that they're bored, and I'm like, yeah, they really made themselves, like, one of the most boring slumber parties.
Yes.
Like, they drink half a cup of alcohol and then put it away.
Very small TV.
Very small TV.
They're watching the news.
They can't play their music loud. The mom is home.
Yeah, and I would say
nobody gets in the pool.
That, and I'm sure we've been guilty of it. I'm sure we will be guilty of it in the future. But the term dreamlike is certainly an overused thing to talk about movies. I think more than any movie, this truly feels like a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. However, it does feel like a dream, but it's not that like non sequitur or abstract, artful dream type of thing.
You don't think so?
No, because like you see that and sometimes just things will, you know, be hazy for no reason. Like, there's no haze. There's no mist.
What do you mean? Like, when the clock comes in all weird.
Oh,
and then, like,
it was just a poor transfer from video.
Yeah, but that's what I'm
okay,
saying.
That's true. I guess
that's
it is
what
a
it
little.
Does.
Okay, it does do that a bit. Yeah, and the transfers. Yeah.
And just the transfer itself, the
film
the time,
to video
as you
transfer.
Said, as you said, Tara, there's always two musics going.
Okay, you know what? I take that statement back. There's no fog machine, though.
Well, yeah, no.
There is no fog machine.
That's the point.
And there's
nothing about this movie is literal.
And there's no colored light.
Everything is happening. Everything that's unfolding feels very much like it's. There's nothing literal about this movie. Yeah, there's not the colored lights. There's not smoke. So it's not like something like The Black Cat. Or even
yes.
Fatal Frames.
Yes.
Where
Fatal
it's,
Frames
it's
is
very
more just like swaths of ideas.
And there's these intentionally, you know, surrealistic use of lights. This is surrealism in the unintentional way, which to me is what actually makes it like a dream.
Yes, yes. It's confounding at times. However, I'm trying to find where I was writing about the script writer.
Steven Tyler.
No, scriptwriter Steven Tyler, because I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good time to discuss, Because at one point I was like, oh, this is a great script writer.
Amazing, Kara.
And
amazing.
In the beginning, early on, I was like, rock solid. This is amazing. Just straightforward. It's got a plotsome plot. Amazing. I know what's going on. We have a doctor, and then there's a patient, and he's crazy, and he's going to have a frontal lobotomy, and he's sleepy, and then he escapes, and then he starts slitting everybody's throat. You always see who he is. He has the same scrubs on. He has the same mask on. It gets sweaty. Like, great, great plot. Follow yeah. everything that's happening. But
I got this.
My theory of that was just ripped to shreds.
Yeah. When did it get ripped to shreds for you?
Like the 45-minute mark.
Wow, that long?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward.
To me, it gets ripped to shreds right around when you hear the teacher talking very early on.
Okay, now, that's pretty cool. So when we open the scene, it's, you know, the last day of school.
Last day of school. Summer's here.
And we get introduced to, but again, this is a great element of the script writer. Like, we're introduced to the charm of these children, like these 18-year-olds. We have three cool gals and three cool guys, and they all want to date each other and hang out. We have Science, the nerd.
His name is Science, yes.
His name is Science. He's the nerd. He's over on the side. He's like synchronizing his watch to the nuclear clock in Gurn or wherever it is. Bern, Switzerland. I don't remember. already flew out of my brain. Getting sweaty now, just trying to give too many details that I do not remember.
Tara, and so, this is the last slumber party. We're good.
Yeah, I don't need to sweat actively for this. You're well, good. I might be doing that.
You're good
a little
too.
Bit.
We're not doing a super, super important noise industrial classic that we need
okay,
to get.
Okay, I was like, is it a nuclear
right.
clock? Is it an atomic clock? I should know this. I just really yeah. just like, I literally just started sweating.
Yeah, we're not discussing condom, the eighth pillar. We're discussing the last slumber
party. I don't have to
empty
my head with all these things. Thank you. So then, thank goodness. So I'm going to take it down a notch. So we're going to get the characters. We're going to get the charm, and it's really working. We're like, these are real students. They're wearing real things that people wear. And Mike, what's the teacher like during this class?
Oh, well, it's been a pretty great year. And, prom was last week, and that was a really good time. And, there was... A couple of your students were lost down by the train tracks.
Oh, well, they lost them there.
I
but
really
but
enjoyed this class. And I mean, and
then,
he's
like,
and,
it's really been great being your teacher. And, I hope I continue to be your mentor throughout your life's
and then
journey.
Throughout the talking, yes. There's students talking. Yes. There's music going. First
Two
strike.
Two musics.
It's so chaotic.
Students
you can barely
being
hear
charming.
Them. And then we did find out in the interview with our main girl, Chris Jan. Jensen.
Yes. Because I would remember Jan Jansen because that's quite a name.
Is
huh?
that he was the actual teacher in the school that they filmed this scene in.
And boy, it looks like a school too. So.
And so right away, immediately, there's that. Oh, but then actually, even
that little bit of surrealism
is before that when we see the escape mental patient. Scare the chick who's brushing her hair.
I say we open on a clinic and a mad surgeon, and he attacks the teen of the others looking blonde.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, that happens.
Okay, so
first.
So before even that teach, so we're prepared that we might not be able to understand a lot of the dialogue
and that
right away.
Never shows up again. Like randomly, she survives. She's just like, oh my god, there's a man, and then she also.
She never shows up.
It never comes up.
But you're prepared for that. The dialogue may be hard to hear sometimes because this is also where we get, I think, two musics, the talking over and then the cop talking into the walkie talkie, and then she's explaining what happened, but the music's so loud that you can't hear what she's saying. The first strike song, Just a Nightmare,
Just a Nightmare.
Is also going to be the name of this episode.
I did say I love the way you can't hear any voiceover dialogue because there's dueling incidental music.
Yeah.
But aesthetically, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
and,
so we get that and then into the high school scene. So immediately we're going with, okay, people are going to talk over each other. Multiple musics will be playing at the same time.
Yeah.
strap in. We're going for the last
you know,
summer
party
ride.
You know, it's so funny that I've been, I was like, this movie's got it so together. I'm so desensitized to that, I guess. Like, maybe.
Well, right, yeah, yeah.
I might just be incredibly desensitized to it. Or, you know what? I think it was just
no,
such
you,
a...
No, you...
It's such a
when
balm.
You're on the rhythm of these movies, you just... Yeah, and...
It's such a
it's
balm
exactly
to the
what
zone
we
we've been into. Yeah. I was just like, oh, thank God, this exactly. movie. This I need this movie right now.
Exactly.
I need this.
So this was just such a bomb.
Pacing, whatever.
Oh boy. Unknown caller.
How dare this
spam
person
caller.
Not know me?
You know, fitting for this movie that we're discussing.
I know the phone does ring incessantly in this film. But it does say, like, you know, ding, 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 summer break is happening. And what does our main girl, I'm not going to call her a final girl.
Chris,
I mean.
She is the star of this movie.
Yes. Summertime and the living is easy. That's what 18-year-olds say when
it
they're out.
Absolutely is. And we just immediately are with our three main girls, Chris, Linda, and Tracy. And they want to have a slumber party. They want a party all
no,
summer.
Linda does not want a party.
Well,
Linda wants to party anywhere but her own home because her parents are going to be home. But she has the biggest house and a pool. So she is elected to host the thing. And you know what, Mike? I will say this. I never liked hosting the multi-girl slumber party.
No.
Multi-girl slumber parties, though, I'm going to tell you. I don't know what multi-guy slumber parties were like. But if you have more than... I would say if you have more than three, but three, this will also happen. One... gal will end up crying like 100% of the time. At one point in the night, there will be one young lady and they will be crying, and then everybody, one or two other people or half the people, have to go console her, and that's what happens. And then maybe she'll go home, or somebody will go home, or something bad will happen.
For me, I rarely ever did that because honestly, I related to Linda in this movie because, like, the way my house growing up set up, like, it was pretty small. You could hear everything. Like, it's like I would get stressed out about waking people up. Waking my mom. Like, it was just stressful, and I never understood people who wanted to do that. But
well,
generally,
Steve Tyler didn't understand
that,
it because he was willing to
keep
that family in
because
their
the family
home
was
while he
was in
shooting.
The home while they're filming this entire movie. The
they weren't even on vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. So to me, it was always the kids who had, like, basements that were pretty separate.
Yes.
With a door. Like, had like a downstairs room, but there wasn't even a door, and it wasn't that far. It was like a handful of steps down. So, like, I understand if you had, like, a basement that was almost like an apartment.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't have that. So, no. I can think of, like, one. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I hated it.
Well,
doing
and
that.
I didn't want to – I just didn't want to deal with it, honestly. Yeah, I didn't want to deal with all the nonsense.
I didn't
want to
deal with,
like,
any of it.
One-on-one, perfect. None like, more than one, hell no. I would go to my friend's house have this crazy barn and, a whole – like, they raised horses, and there was, like, the barn had a fridge full of beer, so we were hanging out in that barn. You know we were drinking the fridge full of beer. You know we jumped off the roof into that pool, and it was that kind of house, and that's where you go. You do not go to Linda's house.
No, or, yeah, exactly. So I did relate to Linda for not wanting it because her parents don't, but honestly...
Bad location.
It doesn't seem to come into play too much because... Did we note that the main doctor in the movie, I don't believe we did, is Linda's father? So the escaped...
No, it's Linda's husband.
Well, in real life, it is actually Linda's husband, but in the movie, it's Linda's dad. And the escaped mental patient is his patient. So we know that this...
What was his name? Is he Dr... what was it? As a Stern character.
Sickler.
Oh, no, Ryan Sickler. Yeah, that's
So we know that this mental patient is gunning for Dr. Sickler. Now, Dr. Sickler is an interesting character and really... You know, he's interesting because a big plot line for him is getting orange juice for the wife for the morning. Mm-hmm. Also, adding to the dreamlike quality of this movie, where he is at any given time makes no sense in any real
timeline.
It's like timeline.
Time doesn't exist for
Dr.
Sickler.
He's at the hospital, he's at the store, he's at home.
I'm going to call him Dr. Dad because I will get confused by his name.
He's at... the hospital, at home, and at the orange juice store at very unfitting times for when he's at each place.
Yeah, like, he can teleport kind of instantly wherever he needs to be. His hairline is confounding. Yeah. It's like you see him from the front and he is a man with hair, and then you see him from the back and top and it's a whole new level of comb over and baldness pattern that I do not understand. And I feel like it's something that doesn't exist in modern times. And the other thing I appreciate about Dr. Dad is that he is dull and boring and kind of approaches everybody in his dull boring. Like, he kind of has that teacher's approach in talking. Oh, hello, boys.
They obviously went to the same acting school.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not even acting school, just, you know, kind of dry adult, you know.
Well, we know that the orange juice is important because it's mentioned he goes to the store and our three male teens are going to get some beers to go back to his place, but they're trying to keep it cool, like they're not drinking beer. He's like, oh, hey, boys, how's it going? I'm just getting some orange juice for the wife for the morning.
For the morning. And then pause.
Yeah. And then, you know, they're just like, oh, we just had some almonds and some, you know, Pepsis some Pepsi.
And some
we're
going to
go get started on our summer reading.
Pepsis and cashews. And I felt that, you know, saying that they had a few Pepsis.
Maybe you want some cashews.
And some cashews. You know how I feel about cashews. I don't.
I know, but
like
it
kind of
made me want them.
I don't like them. Everyone, look, we have opinions on snack foods, and I've softened on my opinion that cashew is a garbage nut. I have kind of doubled down on my opinion that the worst nut, though, is the Brazil nut, and
oh,
that anybody who says it's their favorite nut is lying, or they have wild taste in things. Do know somebody who loves the Brazil nuts, but they also like those Biscoff cookies as the best cookies.
They're wrong.
They're wrong. Exactly. So you can't. You know, like, it's like you have to see, like, in this grand scheme of things, like, what are your other favorites other than the Brazil nut? You know what I mean? Like, do you like mushy pears and Biscoff cookies? Probably. So, you know, it's okay if you enjoy the cashew. You can enjoy a cashew, but to think that they're better than a pecan or an almond or a peanut even is...
Ultimately, I want a mix.
Ultimately,
I just want a mix.
It's unhinged.
I want to mix. You know
yeah,
I mean?
They're great in a mix. Textural difference, lovely. But I'm just saying that they're not a nut that goes solo.
But this orange
it's
juice.
It's a blending nut.
This orange juice does go through and is mentioned multiple times throughout the movie.
And I found where I was writing about the screenwriter. Okay. So, and this scene, this scene really sealed the deal for me. I'm saying the scriptwriter was really going for it. I was like, I knew I was having some opinion on it. They really captured the manner in which teens talk, you know, because this is some sleepaway camp teen level of swearing.
I will give you that.
It's going hard. Like, the screenwriter was like, look, I'm going to get the way people actually talk. That's how we really talk. They say things like, hey, science, you old sex machine, you going to stick it to anyone tonight? Like, talking about sticking it to people.
Nah, you're just going to whack off.
Now you're having your meat in your hand too long. And then, like when Chris asks her boyfriend, did you rip your Calvins? And he goes, fuck you, whore.
Fuck you, whore.
And then she's like, they're like, oh, where are the guys? And she's like, Scott and Billy are notorious homosexuals.
Yeah.
Like, things like of this matter. And then he'll just randomly call Chris, like, you stupid bitch.
And he's
like,
oh, where's like, whatever, where's Tony? Where, oh, he's a homo.
It goes so hard.
Yeah.
But it truly, I think... That the film, to compare it to, a sleepaway camp.
With the swearing,
the screaming. And, well, they don't scream. They say it in more
pretty
kind
quietly,
of a
sedate
way.
I think
way.
It's got to be because
the family was home.
So
it really makes sense now that we've heard that.
We've mentioned her. We've brushed by her. I think it is time that we really focus on the center of this movie, and that being Chris. So Chris, red hair, freckles.
Yeah, kind of strawberry blonde, cute freckles,
green
eyes.
Just the strangest look.
I mean, she looks sleepy. She has really...
She
really,
looks like she's on Valium.
She does. And I know that Bleeding Skull Review said that she had coke circles under her eyes. And I agreed with that until she said that they weren't doing any... I mean, not that
she
would
admit
to it.
She said, like, not during the filming, but maybe after.
But, like, I get this woman some concealer. Do you know what I mean? Because she is the... The sleepiest, most bitter looking, and
she's got the foulest mouth. She's wearing a Vikings jersey the entire movie.
Oh, how did you know what sport
she
team
said
it was?
In the
oh
she said it in the interview.
I was so impressed. I was like, you knew the sport.
I actually did know too.
Oh, how?
I know that purple and yellow are.
Oh.
Look, I there's things that are just in your head from being in your head.
I didn't even know that it was a football jersey. I thought it might be hockey.
Also, Vikings, the Vikings symbol being on the JonBenet comp on hospital.
Oh, that's true. It is.
Yeah. So, like, look, I know,
you know, for
I
some
know
reason.
Things.
Well, I look, I wasn't, I thought it might be. I did think it might be hockey. I don't know why. I wasn't looking at it closely. It doesn't matter.
She's wearing
it.
It
was a wonderful
entire
choice.
Movie.
Well,
and just kind of stomping around and I'm bored. I've had enough alcohol. Like,
where
are
the boys?
That's the thing is, like, as kind of foul mouth as they are and how much they want to party, you're right, Tara. Like, they're not, like, getting trashed, really.
No, they're like, well, I had a half a glass of whatever this liquid
she
is.
She mentions,
and
like,
put it
wanting
away.
To get high, but they never do. So, actually, more slasher movies, like, you know, there's definitely more, like, joint smoking and beer drinking in other slasher movies. This doesn't really have that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, there is a. Somebody does commit the ultimate villainous move and then get murdered, which I agree with.
Eating an apple, puts that apple right next to the bed and gets murdered.
Well, I mean, not only did they eat half of an apple whole, which is, you know, I mean, I guess it's fine because they're alone. But then that's the problem with eating a whole apple. What are you going to do with it? How do you dispose of it? That marks the difference between a villain and not a villain. And if you take your apple and you put it on a nightstand, then it rolls off into the floor and then you try to go to sleep after that. You are a villain, and you should probably get your throat slit by a maniac fake doctor.
So, this is true. And she also got a foul mouth, too. Linda's, you know, definitely
oh,
doesn't.
Dude, these
yeah, she's like, oh, you scared the shit out of me. Like,
they're
at one point,
really, really
Chris's
wild.
Like, damn it, damn you. Like,
this jerk off chickened out on
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
like,
jerk
this
off.
This jerk off chickened out of me, and the homo took the bedspread.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
really
like,
good. And they don't, and that's kind of the energy they're delivering
yes.
it. Like, it is kind of like a nasty but sedate tone. Like,
and they're constantly, like, going in
it's
and
really
out of
like
room.
It's really, like,
sinking
their
same
in on
room.
Me. Like, now, like, usually we watch this, and we sleep on it. I think about it a lot. And then
we literally
talk about
just
it.
Finished
we literally
it.
Just finished it. It was my first time. And really, like, it's kind of like I got that first – the base coat is sinking in, and I'm
yeah.
just kind of really taking it in.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed the ride before of being in this wild universe of nostalgia as well because – it had all those wonderful, like, home elements of the 80s that
well,
I adore.
The phones.
The phones.
That are ringing nonstop.
Oh, my God. Those heavy, heavy phones that could sit on a desk and the lovely wall phone that would hang up with such satisfaction and would have, like, little mount for it. Those made me so happy. And then there's this toilet seat cover that, like I will put a fuzzy top on a toilet seat because I enjoy the whimsy of it, but they not only had a fuzzy top for their cover, they had a whole fuzzy top for the tank. It was carpeted toilet. The whole toilet was covered in beautiful carpet. Were you impressed by that, Mike?
It's amazing.
I thought that was fantastic.
Well,
some people may say unhygienic, but I don't care. No. You don't pee on the top of the toilet. You pee on the bottom. If anything's unhygienic, it's the rug under the toilet. And then, or if you put carpet like on the inside lip of the toilet, that would be gross. Now, the wallpaper.
That's what I was about to set you up with, Tara. What is up with that wallpaper? It is amazing. And now the wallpaper we speak of mostly goes up the stairway up and then is the upstairs hallway.
And I think it's on the ceiling.
It is crazy.
And it's black and white, and it's really, like, I would imagine it's the type of thing that, like, that family would come over and other people would shit on it, and they would be like, this wallpaper. Like, when I went to your grandparents' house the first time, and everybody was like, did you see the wallpaper? And I'm like, yeah, it was the most glorious
it's
wallpaper
amazing.
I've ever seen in my life. There's a circular wall, and it's covered in metallic gold filigree wallpaper. I was like, I never want to leave this place. I want to just stare at this amazing wall the whole time. I don't understand their problem with it, and I'm sure everybody had a problem with this disorienting black and white graphic wallpaper. Oh fuck, it's so good. We need a stairwell so we can do something of this nature. They
I'm
knew how
it.
To do it.
I also like the kitchen wallpaper is nice, more colorful, flowered. It's nice, but the
gorgeous
the black and white
green
wallpaper
linoleum
is nuts.
Cherry tomato like brocade design. Oh yeah,
so
it's
being
all
in this house is just
a joy.
Yes,
I get why they did it. Oh yes. Oh, and then also at one point, Chris, I'm just looking at my notes around here. Chris, like at one point, like we see a still of a clock, which was hazy, the one that Mike referenced. And I was like, oh, 7 a.m. I guess they fell asleep and woke up. And then I was like, you know, like she does kind of look like she just woke up at 7 a.m., which then her eyes would be that tired. But then she also reminds me of Laura Palmer's mom.
Definitely. You said that. I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely.
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She has those kind of like all-seeing eyes that like stare a little too long. And kind of her acting methodology is just kind of to gaze into the distance 100%. And react with very limited things until she or do a complete freak out. It's like either or, you don't have a middle.
Yeah.
So I would say that's very similar. But I did enjoy that Jan, the actress, said that she was trying to downplay her performance because she had only done stage and she didn't want to overact for film.
And boy, she does. Ugh. When she finds a dead body, it's as she says, it's like she just dropped a penny.
She's like, oh.
Yeah.
I know.
Everyone's reaction to everything is totally wild.
One scream at the end of this film.
Now, we haven't really discussed the killer, Tara, and I guess we should just go ahead and say...
There's three killers.
The killers.
Yeah, there's three killers.
Well, there's really two.
Three.
What do you mean three? Are you counting Chris?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, because she's defending herself. I don't count her as a killer.
She killed someone.
Yeah, but no. See, she
tried to kill two people, but only one of them maybe
died. The killers
died.
Being the escaped mental patient and... Mr. Science, who's also wearing scrubs. There's a lot of scrubs in this movie.
Yeah, and Dad's wearing scrubs.
Killer sees Science doing the killing, the look on his face is like, hey, I'm the killer. He's wearing a surgical mask the whole time, so you never see his...
He just kind of eye acts.
He's like... And then Science goes to do another kill, and our man comes up behind him and slits his throat like, no, I'm the killer.
I mean, we haven't discussed... Like, I was thinking of this, too. I just, like, these things are rushing to me again. They're just digesting, right? They're kind of getting, it's like, the menacing with the scalpel, I don't find the scalpel that scary.
Except when you think about it, it probably is crazy sharp.
Yeah, but we cut meat with knives. Like, why is it scarier than a knife? It's just tiny. It makes more precise incisions. It's just more precision in the incision. Yeah.
I hear you.
Like, sure, it's sharp, but I mean, a knife is sharp too. Like, and also like things that aren't sharp are scary too. Like a lance or a run through by an axe. Scary.
He wanted to
chainsaw.
Keep with the theme.
Chainsaws aren't really sharp per se.
Yeah, but chainsaw's not at a hospital. He was keeping with the theme, and he wanted to like act like this is just what he got. He's a mental patient.
Well, and then here's the thing. Well, he's a mental patient, but you can kind of understand why he wants to run away, because they're going to give him a prefrontal lobotomy.
Not a bottle in front of me, a frontal lobotomy.
Exactly. That's what... And you know, I can see why he would want to run away from that. He's like, I don't want one of those. And then he ran away. And put blankets in his bed. And this brings me to my next point, and that is that maybe there is something wrong with Dr. Dad. Maybe Dr. Dad has had a prefrontal lobotomy because he doesn't notice many things.
He definitely does not.
Dr. Dad did not notice the guy that had the mental patient that had escaped and left a blanket under the sheets, didn't care to look. He didn't notice when his wife, he came and kissed her on the head, and there was just a blanket over her face and her hair sticking out from the top, but she was really dead underneath, but he didn't notice. He didn't notice when he drove into his home in the morning. There's a ladder at the front of the home going right up to his daughter's window, and the window's open, and he knows there's an escape maniac. There's somebody else's car parked in his driveway, right in the middle of his driveway, right?
And it's Dr. Dad's not noticing that.
I'm just saying, he gets into an elevator with the murderer, and he's like, oh, doctor, and it's like, dude, that's your mental patient that you're supposed to give a lobotomy to. You've been examining. You know this guy. So I'm just saying, Dr. Dad might, you know, be overworked. He might be sleepy. He did work all night.
I don't know. He did work all night. So, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just, maybe
he's not
overworked.
The quickest on the uptake, Dr. Dad. Works in our favor, though, huh?
I mean, it's every time he's on screen, I'm excited. I mean, every time Chris is on screen, I'm the most excited. But really, everybody here, you can just get excited about. At one point when one of the teen guys is trying to bang the blonde, he's like, asked her to go down to get some stuff, and he says, don't forget the foam. And Terry, you're thinking that's
a spermicidal foam. Yeah.
Don't
forget the foam, dearie. That's what he said when he was about to a chick he was about to bang.
I've never in my life heard of anybody using that. I think that was
Seinfeld. You don't remember when Seinfeld?
I'm saying in my life.
In actual life.
I've heard about it in shows or like on a movie, but never in life had I ever heard anyone like getting it, using it, anything like that.
Well, I mean, we've been together like 25 years. How many foam incidents would you have had?
Like, I'm not saying me. Of course, me and you, but what I'm saying I've never heard of anybody.
I remember it being around. I remember like you could get some at the doctor. They would offer you some. Like, I remember it vaguely, but I don't know anyone who ever used it. I remember people talking about it, like, you ever foam? And I do remember, like, as a teen, people being like talking about diaphragms and whether they're going to get a diaphragm. And it was like 74% effective. And I'm like, why would you even?
Crazy.
Yeah, I just that always seemed like the least exciting thing to me was the diaphragm. And maybe people swear by their diaphragm. I think people just go with what they know. But yeah, the foam, I never squirted that in there. Never did that.
Now, Tara, did you like the killer's hiding place?
Under the bed?
Next to the bed.
That's the thing, I think
the people in this movie, maybe it's something to do with the town, maybe something happened in this town, but no one really notices things. Like,
yeah, they're on a lot of Valium.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, because like you would sense somebody next.
He was laying next to my side of the bed. He would get a little cough drop wrappers on him. But also, like lately, I've been kind of like not feeling like putting my various, like, you know, kimonos in such a way, so I just kind of throw them on the floor next to the bed so I can get whatever I need.
Yeah.
So that's, you know.
Yeah, he'd be covered in something.
Yeah, he would have half-eaten cough drops and he'd be rolling around in kimonos. He wouldn't have a chance.
Now, do you like his eye acting and the way that it constantly shows his face holding the scalpel up to the camera?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, there's a lot of looking...
Because they want to show it's got blood on it.
A lot of looking in the camera. And really, I think the most exciting part of the movie is the, you know, 10 or so minutes of Chris walking around the house, you know, just sort of looking, finding dead bodies and not really doing much, not really reacting too
hard. She kind of does a lot of eye acting. She acts like she's the maniac with the thing. She's kind of like,
Now, it should be said here that this movie does have multiple endings and...
About three.
While... I said this movie is at least one of the most dreamlike movies of all time, and in many ways it's unintentional surrealism. Mm. There is something to be said for that possibly the majority of this movie is a foreshadowing of a dream, a dream foreshadowing real life circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be part of what is happening in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a dream foreshadowing a dream foreshadowing reality.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
And
it's like Wizard of Oz.
Much like it.
Which I always felt was kind of a cop-out, but I did not feel this was a cop-out because it's so unhinged.
It is. I will not have you say anything bad about Wizard of Oz real quick. I'm going to go ahead and insert that.
Well, I love
Wizard of Oz. And then I'm going to...
Oh, you know what? Hey, Wizard of Oz, no offense intended.
There you go. Because we watched that recently last year.
It was fantastic.
And we were completely blown away by it.
No, it was an amazing movie.
So you heard it at first. Wizard of Oz and Last Slumber Party are two amazing movies. As it continues to unfold, the killers, you know, they... are either doing their thing in the dream, but then when the dream wakes up, it turns out that it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
Is that what you think is happening, Tara?
Yeah, I think Chris, you know, has, much like Laura Palmer's mom, can predict the future.
Oh,
she knows
wow.
what's about to happen. She knows who's menacing who. And so it was just a foretelling of what was about to go down. So, yeah, I just think that we just got a preview through her third eye, and now... we're experiencing it. So it's great. But I did like that finally in the last scene of the film, of the second ending, third ending, finally the nurse was like, call the police. There's a maniac on the loose. Like, finally somebody was like, let's call the police. There's something dangerous happening here. I really did enjoy that.
Well, because like for so much of the movie, you know, and again, many slashers contain something similar to this where she could just run out of the house
yeah.
and run.
Won't.
and yeah. run to the police.
But it's like that dream thing where just something keeps pulling her back.
She stays yeah. in the entire time, and she's
like
constantly
the haunting,
in.
You know?
Exactly. So I think that's part of the quality of this, right?
And I do also want to note, like, this home is wild. It's great. Like, and I don't even mean wild. I mean, I think it's aesthetically beautiful, and I enjoy their design choices in this home. And the teenager's room is somehow just the only beige room. However, there are posters.
Tara, tell us about the posters.
We have a very prominent Sesame Street with Big Bird poster, which
sure is
strange. Strange choice. But then we also get a little Tom Selleck poster.
Sure do.
We get the Beatles.
Yep.
And the Bee Gees.
Yep.
And Patrick Duffy.
Yep. And Xanadu.
Oh, and Xanadu. Yeah, and Xanadu.
So...
which now I want to watch Xanadu.
Amazing poster choice. And yeah, it's like one side of the room is tons, and then the other side is basically a blank wall with one Sesame Street poster.
Yes. Blank wall, one Xanadu. I would love to talk about Xanadu because that is a movie that the plot is insane.
Great movie.
It's the idea of making Xanadu, what actually goes down in Xanadu. But it's also like I think about it and I'm like, exciting, roller skating, the muses, Zeus and Hera. And but it's slower than you think it's going to be.
Well, I'm sure we'll get to that.
But I love the slow. I'm not saying that I'm complaining. I'm not complaining.
But Tara, you know, we've mentioned how phones play a prominent role in this movie. Phones ring and ring and ring. No one answers. What about when there's two phones in Linda's bathroom? What do you think about that?
I think, bravo, Linda. You're living the dream. I don't know how you have that many
and Chris
wall
goes,
jacks.
Stereo
in your
phones. Yeah. So
in your
that's what I was thinking.
Home, you got to plug them shits in.
And there's
you're
two
living the dream.
In this, the bathroom?
These are rich people. That's all I'm thinking.
There's two in the bathroom?
Well-to-dos. She took them both into the bathroom.
Totally.
Maybe she had a splitter.
I would like to see your notes.
I think we've covered all the major things. I'm just kind of like digesting, enjoying. The other thing I'd like to point out as a source of joy is the girls for the slumber party all choose to wear giant shirts and tiny shorts. And having the actress say that it was the director's shirt and he like wanted her to wear a big jersey and tiny shorts, like jean shorts. It was just wild that this adult man was like, no, that's what you should wear. That's appropriate. And then somebody was wearing just a men's shirt. So do you think the director gave all the gals his shirts to wear because he wanted them in big shirts?
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
I just like to read. I really always like just reading directly what you wrote.
Oh.
This doctor dad is wild. Slow on the uptake. Not one to notice things, you dig? Like his wife sleeping with a sheet on her face.
Yeah,
ladder
true.
To his daughter's window. Boyfriend's car in the driveway. The killer replacing his body with blankets in the first place. Maniac Mr. Randall's in the elevator. I love just reading your just as you've written.
Did
them.
We talk about the non-sexy shower scene?
Wow.
Where the shower curtain is just kind of thrown over
Tell
the
us
top?
About that, Tara.
Well, Chris is going to bang her boyfriend, which, hey, great. You know, this is going to be a sexy movie. I'm like, ooh, this is the beginning. It's going to be a sexy movie. So she hops in the shower. And usually in a slasher, when somebody hops in the shower, you see, like, boobs or, like, you know, soaping down of a nubile young body. But that is not the case here. We see a girl wearing a towel in the shower, taking a shower
Chris
while
is wearing a towel.
She's wearing a brown towel in the shower with her hair pinned up, however it got wet. And then we see through a clear shower curtain, but the shower curtain's just kind of like thrown over a different shower curtain because it had an opaque shower curtain, but it looked like it had a glass door as well. It was very confusing. Enjoyed it. Thought something else was going to happen. Thought we would have a sexy scene. And then we thought, I thought she'd come in and try to like bang her boyfriend, but he was already dead by then. Nothing
already
happened.
Dead.
She just came back out with dry hair and the same jersey and was like, hey, you jack off. Where'd you go? You know,
like, well, yeah. And that's the thing is like, there are a lot of people get killed and pretty quickly. It doesn't take long to ramp up the quickness of the killing. The killing happens and it goes and it's kill, 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 kill. And I like that.
Yeah, least 10, right?
It feels like it. Yeah. It feels like the killing is ramped up.
Well, we got, hold on, let's count them out. We got the three boys, the three girls. We got science. We got the two people at the bus stop.
Yep.
Okay, so.
Mom.
So 10.
Yeah, and again, it's unclear. And again, if we're going with
maybe a nurse.
The premonition of what's probably going to happen then, you know, as the movie ends.
Yeah.
I think we've been very clear about this movie. I think anyone listening is like, oh, I get this movie.
Crystal clear.
I think it can't be understated, the synth music in the movie that many times feels like someone just sort of smashing their hands on the keyboard. And it
but
just
in
being
a
very,
nice way.
And it just being very loud and over everything.
Yeah, like the incidental ambient sounds under the that Alfesta is making for their commentary. That is really pleasant and lovely, and I would actually like to listen to that. I would like a copy of that. I was never thinking I like a copy of this. It's not offensive. It's just like, it's more confusing.
Yeah, and apparently, so this movie was
Sometimes it like leads into the metal again. So like you have, it's...
Well, yeah. And there is an explanation for that is because this movie was sold to Japan before it was actually even finished. So some of the edits are done from the Japanese people who bought it, and the first strike music is from them. It's not from our director, Steven
Tyler. Oh, because they were probably like, this movie is so low energy. We need something to pep it up.
I mean, or just they just wanted some good old first strike heavy metal.
Some metal and fun.
And it's pretty raw and great, and I'm glad that that choice is made. And that's why I bet there, at points there's the first strike is playing and the synth music is playing.
When do you think the teenagers have the most fun in this movie?
When they're listening to First Strike and dancing together, holding each other right when it cuts to the summer party.
Yeah, that's probably
they're jumping up and down.
And when the boys are driving around drinking Budweiser,
they're probably having a good time.
See,
now I would say that I understand there is a strange languidness to it, but it actually isn't. I actually think it does zip.
Yeah, you know I mean, I feel like I've been dreaming this entire encounter from watching it to recording about it right now. I'm more confused than when we started.
Yeah, there's a strange thing with that, whereas like there's a languidness, but it does zip by, and it is a short movie. It's 70 minutes, so it does zip in a strange way. You know?
I think the script is strong. I'm going to stand by it. You know what? I'm going, like I started to FUD myself. I'm going back on it.
Yeah.
Strong script. Yeah. Strong script. Strong plot. He tried a lot of things. He went for it. You can't say that Steve Tyler didn't go for it. He went for it with his words. He went for it with his course of action. He went for it in the choice of setting. Everything that happened, you can't say he didn't do the damn thing.
I absolutely agree.
Taking risks, making movies, swearing a bunch.
Would you say you loved The Last Summer
Party? I fucking loved it.
And this is the only movie I ever made. This is the only movie anyone in it. This is one of those singular visions.
Yeah.
We'll never going
well,
to.
Well, how
it'll
do you think it did
again.
In Japan?
I hope
it you said it was bought by was Japan, but it wasn't bought by the country of Japan. Like,
it was
a Japanese.
It was a national treasure. It's actually
it's now in the national treasury of Japan.
This movie is incredible. I encourage anyone who is on the wavelength of these movies, and I assume if you're listening to this, mostly you are. If you haven't seen it, I can't recommend it enough.
If you haven't seen Wizard of Oz. Also, we'll recommend that.
I'd like to do an episode
on Twist ending on that one.
One thing I wanted to note too, I actually, though I had seen this a few times, I either forgot or didn't realize that this was filmed in Louisiana. And there's something weird about the nothing about it says Louisiana to me, right? Like,
no, but they had the Floridian radio station because they were talking about Broward County.
But then you do realize that like suburbs in most places do sort of look
like that,
the same, you know? So it's like it is interesting, whereas like I didn't get Louisiana from this because you think, you know, swamp, you think that, you think the beyond, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like you think Avenging Force, you know, you don't necessarily
think that old style
yeah,
home, colonnade.
But do you think that's the accents must be that too?
I mean, Tracy's accent was wild.
Tracy's accent, her accent wildest, was wild. But Chris's got an accent too.
She does, but I thought it was pretty low key. I mean, I've had family in Louisiana, and I can usually pick out their accent. And I will say that around New Orleans, their accents get a little funky. It's that Cajun thing.
It sure is. Well, last slumber party, we love it here. You'll love it. We promise. Guarantee. And if you don't love it, well, you need to look deep into your heart.
You know what? If you don't love it,
you need to look deep into your soul.
Take a Valium and try again. Take some Robitussin, try again.
And have some wine.
Wait till you're half awake.
Yeah. And you know,
we watched it in the morning.
Look into the mirror and just be like, come on, you jerk off.
Drinking green juice, you jerk off.
Yeah, yeah. You better get into this movie, you jerk off. Hell yeah. Well, not
stupid
sure.
Bitch.
You stupid fucking whore. Get into this movie, you fucking whore.
Oh, they're so charming.
Get
I
into
love
the
it.
Mirror, call yourself a fucking whore, and yep. Get into the last slumber party. Not sure what we're doing next week. Like I said, as I've been preparing so much for the Fatal Frames drunk commentary. So once that's done, maybe as you're listening to this, I might be drunk on camera.
Ooh.
Filming right now. As
I know I
got to
cut your hair right now. We got to get you camera
ready, sir.
Gotta get you camera ready.
So not sure what we're doing next week, but again, you know, this one came up last minute. We'll try to, you know, post a few days before us if you want to keep up. But otherwise, go watch Last Slumber Party over and over again on a loop until the next episode. How about that?
Until it makes sense.
And do it. And once it makes sense, do it again until it doesn't make sense again. We'll talk to you next week.